You're listening to a provocation from the 2014 World's Literature Festival in Norwich. This year at World's, the writers focused on the theme of nostalgia.
I think that I can say in two sentences what I have to say, and then I would say it a bit more slowly for about 12 minutes, I think. So my two remarks are that I have a feeling that we've got a problem of definition on our hands, because my impression of the word nostalgia is that it does not mean a longing for the past and an unearthing of lost things, and an attempt to retrieve history. I think there is a specific meaning to nostalgia, which is different, and which we align with those other considerations at a certain risk. And the second general remark I want to make is that for myself, the only interest I can find in the present invocation of nostalgia is that it represents a virus of weakening which is spread all over our culture like an oily paste. And were it merely a virus of weakening, which I think is akin to the weakening which words like trauma, identification, and irony have also greatly undergone. Let me not preempt what I have to say. I will, if you would forgive me for reading, I will say it, and we'll be through, as I said, in about 12 minutes. And someone had to take on the opening introductory session, there will be some opening introductory remarks. In fact, it may be that one of the peculiarities of talking about this notion of, for one, I find profoundly suspect, the notion of nostalgia, is that it condemns us to an endlessly reiterated series of beginnings or series of announcements about the fact that we are about to begin on this. Why do I call my talk Is Nostalgia a Bromide? By bromide, I mean that 19th century popular sedative caused by bromide songs, which was given to invalids or to troublesome children or to dogs to induce a state of detached sleepiness in them. And that's why my question is nostalgia. In fact, or the contemporary use of the word nostalgia, a kind of verbal bromide. Well, I've tried and tried with our assigned topic, but for myself, I can't find a good word to say for nostalgia. If I detected it in my own writing, I'd know that something had gone seriously awry. I'd need to set fire to it. Of course, this may well indicate nothing more than my own badly warped sensibility. Certainly, my strong suspicion of nostalgia coexists with the fact that I'm sure, like everyone else here, I'm profoundly preoccupied with retracing the past, brooding about it, retrieving it, and reinterpreting it. But I would say that those are not the same questions as pursuit of nostalgia. And part of the burden of my polemic is to say that today's notion of nostalgia needs to be carefully demarcated from the search to retrieve what is lost, and indeed from pine veil itself, pine and veil, the pain of the loss of home. These aren't identical to nostalgia, even if historically they may have been closer and often still taken to mean the same. But I do want to insist on this wedge, however apparently slim it is, between nostalgia and Heimweh. And I think an awful lot of terms, and political terms in fact, on the nature of that wedge and the need to maintain that analytic wedge. Nostalgia is a notion which by now is too crammed with differing elements to its own good. If it is a portmanteau word, it bulges unbecomingly at the seams. It's historically labour. We could distinguish between those inexhaustible accounts of longing and tracing one's steps, or retrievals, which indeed seem to be universal hopes enacted in the classical literature of voyages, descents into hell like Dante and his companion Virgil, or the wandering Aeneas, or Odysseus getting back to Ithaca after all his journeying, or the longings of Orpheus to fetch back the dead Eurydice, the psalmist's exiles remembering Zion while living by the waters of Babylon, or the mythical golden age of Lucian, or in pastoral poetry, or the retrospective glances of the Renaissance, the classical age, all of which events endless rewinding and disinterments of digging up the past, if not the very dead, in the sands. We can think of the sharp longings in the literature of our contemporaries, which John mentioned this morning, the current interest in historical palimpsests. In short, we can all make up a considerable list, indeed a liturgy, of our literary candidates for retrospection. But what is meant today by the word nostalgia seems to me to not be identical with these forms of retrospection and reminiscence. Isn't there a peculiar air to today's use of nostalgia? A peculiar air which escapes us if we think of it simply as a humane longing to regain the past. I should just say, as an aside, that nostalgic feelings do, of course, depend on the luxury of having a past that you yearn to retrieve, rather than a past that you've managed to escape, perhaps with a feeling of relief, perhaps a past that you will recall, if you must recall it, with dismay or with horror. Not all of us have families, not all of us have ancestries, not all of us can trace the genealogy. Even in easier circumstances, the act of nostalgic distancing sanitizes as it selects. Its invoked past is hardly the past as experience. Perhaps that's its point. How do we ever, in fact, know that the past is over? Is nostalgia, perhaps, a means of artificially establishing the past as past, by purveying it as more safely finished, more sealed up than it actually is? Nostalgia may achieve its air of completion by smoothing over, like a tranquilizer, like a bromide, what is and what properly ought to be raw, painful, and jagged. An apropos remark by Theodor Adorno: today it is part of morality not to be at home in one's own home. It's part of morality not to be at home in one's own home. Of course, his context was Germany, and Germany seen from the distance from America. In fact, the very word nostalgia seems to be both blurred, systematically blurred in its being, and also heavily synthetic. It's a carnage to dignify that existing sharpener, Heimweh, which is simply a compound of the German words for home and pain. As I'm sure we've all ascertained, the origins of the word were quasi-medical. Invented in 1688 as a weighty sounding medical condition by Johannes Hofer, a medical student interested in the plight of distraught Swiss mercenary soldiers removed from their mountain peaks to be deployed on the plains. some military physicians felt that the malady of these mercenaries stemmed from their brains and eardrums, which had been damaged by the constant clanging of native cowbells. This illness would be, and apparently was, cured by a promise on their sick beds of their rapid discharge and their return home. Gradually, though, it slid into being viewed as a psychological state, which, qua psychological state, lay beyond such practical help. It became a cast of mind rather than a treatable medical pathology. And in fact, you find Immanuel Kant's lectures on anthropology mention precisely this transition. So that's a familiar potted history of nostalgia's emergence, which initially tells us that it's undergone both a dilution and at the same time a spread. Why should it be that this virus, as I think of it, of a constant invoking of a weakened form of nostalgia is so rampant now? And what, if any, is its counter to the rise of other currently popular, but often indiscriminately watered down categories, such as trauma, or, if differently, the case of the unfortunately enfeebled versions of irony that run everywhere today? I think there are good reasons to wonder about the sources of the cloudy vagueness, even the saccharine quality, which is pervasive in this contemporary invoking of nostalgia. Nostalgia, to repeat, is not the same as a search for the past unearthed by memory. It is not a straightforward longing for some lost good. My intuition is that there's something a lot riskier, a lot darker, in what might think of as the underbelly of the otherwise rather sanitized work that nostalgia does. Nostalgia doesn't simply repeat or duplicate memory. In fact, it may well distort or evade the real work of memory. I just work my way rapidly through some criticisms of contemporary nostalgia, and I'll start on a cheerful note by telling you that, if you don't already know it, that Nostalgia Critic happens to be the name of an American TV show on a minor channel in which a young comedian, Doug Walker, reviews for his show the movies of his childhood in the 1970s, and he feels dismayed by how badly they hold up. You can find it on YouTube if you look up Nostalgia Critic. And the beauty of it is, for our purposes, the opening catchphrase of every episode of the little show is, "I'm the Nostalgia Critic. I remember it, so you don't have to." And I think this comic appeal to nostalgia, as for Carey's, is admirably apt in itself, because nostalgia in itself has a hint of the ready-made. You do not have to exert yourself under the warm wash of nostalgia. It has, at best, an ersatz quality. I would go so far as to wonder whether we might even ask if nostalgia is an honourable emotion. Or, indeed, is it an emotion at all? Or is it more of an ascribed mood which exists only in that description? Or, to put the question another way, is it almost what we could call a literary mood or a literary emotion? I'm using literary in the pejorative sense there. and yet maybe nobody is truly attracted by it. I have to say that I wrote this before listening to everybody this morning, so I know that people are truly attracted. But never, I would push on with my remarks. I wondered whether anybody seriously subscribes to nostalgia. Is it perhaps a euphemism for a kind of consent to a mild and culturally encouraged form of self-deception? The American critic Susan Stewart's book, On Longing, does explicitly call nostalgia a social disease. She's convinced that it's ideological and is caught up in a profoundly conservative narrative. She emphasizes what she calls its lack of authenticity. She views it as, quote, a sadness without an object, or as a kind of utopian feeling which is virtually hostile to actually lived history. If we wanted to fish up a speedy, perhaps a caricature slice of this kind of nostalgia which she attacks, we could cite these remarks from a former British Conservative, Prime Minister John Major. I quote, 50 years from now, Britain will still be the country of long shadows on county grounds, warm beer, invincible green suburbs, dog lovers and pools fill us in, and as George Orwell said, old maids bicycling to Holy Communion through the mornings. And yet, even that characterization is not as straightforward as all that. It turns out that Major's was a heavily strategic speech made in 1993 to the Conservative Group for Europe, and in it, he was endorsing two fellow Conservatives who were waving at this question, Britain's continuing membership of the European Union. And he finished the quotation that I have just given you this way. Surely we trust our own integrity as a people, quite enough to fear nothing in Europe. That was 1993. We needn't labour the ironies of recent political history here. Let me mention some ambiguous defences of nostalgia now. Again, I'm moving on a rapid pace of generalities. People started to raise the question this morning of how can you be nostalgic for a condition or a place that you never inhabited? What myth of origins is this? The French philosopher Barbara Castan, who's written her own book on nostalgia, thinks it's all to do with the power of your mother tongue, even though you may dislike that country intensely. And here we can't help but recall Hannah Arendt in exile in America, nevertheless remembering and missing, of course, her native German language. To be rootless and wandering, so Barbara Castan argues, produces a nostalgia that has nothing to do with belief in a national identity, but with, she says, an imagined home that we carry around, which constantly changes. The name of this home is language, the maternal language. And one wonders why, by the way, that maternal language is the feminine standard here, why we don't have a father tongue, why we don't have that phrase. Some cultural historians and literary theorists defend nostalgia as a useful and humane kind of consolation. The main propagandists of this time, the social historian Dennis Waldo writes, often seen as merely escapist, nostalgia also offers solace and self-understanding for those displaced by the larger movements of our time. And so begins what he calls the critical productive nostalgia can result. The historian E.J. Hobsbawm described the matter literally as a twilight zone between history and memory, between the past as a generalized record which is open to relative discussion and inspection, and the past as a remembered part of or background to one's own lap, Omar Costello in Twilight indeed. Twilight, though, does seem to be a rather good rendition of nostalgia. Twilight and its flitting vampires. How can we learn an actual defense of nostalgia? Some might try to argue that it's close not only to longing for consolation, but to a hope for reparation, of redrawing some line we took that went awry. So now you try to retrace your steps to fetch up in better place, where you could rework the sequence of events, this time with a happier outcome. Others, though, might condemn this as flagrant fantasizing. In fact, the more interesting aspect of nostalgia might be its particularly kind of retrospection and its skewed temporal emotionality. It can, as somebody remarked this morning, with an odd elasticity, become a nostalgia not only for the present, but also for the future. To restate your self-understanding, perhaps, to become that which you always felt that you should have been. A sort of exercise in the pleather perfect tense. I move to a conclusion with a stanza from Silver Plant's poem, The Island. She writes, "What I want back is what I was before the bed, before the knife, before the brooch pin and the salve fixed me in this parenthesis. Horses fluent in the wind, a place, a time gone out of mind. But actually, what I want back may well be what I hadn't and what I wasn't." The outcome, I think, of this great line of Silver Plants, "What I want back is what I was," is that on examination, you may well find that you were never that at all in the first place. There was no clear point in time at which you once stood in fully confident possession of your health, your love, your good looks, your mind, or whatever. This line of Plants, if taken in a general sense, reaches for an impossible wholeness, achieved through a retreat stretching into the far past. That is where any larger error of any identification-ridden moment, which lays claim to have discovered what it is now, to its compelling onrush of feeling what it must have been then. Although what, anyways, it really matter, this lament that now we no longer have something, which may never really have been asked to have had then. I think it does matter at this level. The grand collective designations of nation, ethnicity, religion, identifications which can operate to devastating effect, might rest on the same kind of retrospective identifications, on the same saturation in fantasy that supports nostalgia. I'm sure that Mladic and Karadzic had a very perfect line in the literary nostalgia. How many kinds of unhelpful identification depend on an urge to consolation, in supposition that since we can't be certain of being it or of having had it in the present, then we must have been it or must have had it in the past, and nobody is going to take that away from us. More broadly, I will stop now with this stanza entitled Nostalgia from Billy Collins' poem. The 1790s will never come again. Childhood was big. People would take walks to the very tops of hills and write down what they saw in their journals without speaking. Our collars were high and our hats were extremely soft. We would surprise each other with alphabets made of twigs. It was a wonderful time to be alive, or even dead.
World's Literature Festival is run by Writers Centre Norwich. For more information about the centre, visit writerscentrenorwich.org.uk.